Hey, Sean. Hey, Laurel. How's it going?
Oh, hey, John.
Hey, John.
What's up? It seems like you guys are kind of tense.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, we're in the news business, right? And we've done all these news stories about the lame duck session and about the budget. But now there was that big ruling in one of the lame duck cases, and the budget might be coming to a close, and...
I think we're just worried that we're not going to have anything to report on pretty soon.
Yeah, we could run out of news.
Guys, come on. There's always going to be news. And these are just developments along the way. It sounds like you need to calm down.
You know what helps me calm down? Podcasting.
Same.
All right, let's do it. This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel White.
This week, everybody, take a deep breath. Let's talk about the news. So, to let everybody in on a little secret, that whole intro was just an elaborate ruse to give us an excuse to play Taylor Swift's new song, You Need to Calm Down.
We're not actually nervous that there will be no more news in the state of Wisconsin.
I think Sean is.
I'm always nervous.
You've been in this business long enough and you haven't run out so far.
Yeah.
Any day it could happen. We just run out of news. Doesn't that seem like the way the world is heading, guys? There's just no news these days.
No more news. We'll just all be watching cat videos and holding hands.
I guess we'll podcast about that.
I was trying to think of things that are happy.
That's our next WPR Politics live show. Watching cat videos and holding hands.
That doesn't sound creepy at all.
Nope. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
We'll see you there.
Mm-hmm. So what happened this week?
We got a new ruling in one of the lame duck lawsuits.
This was like the first ruling we got. I'd say by a higher court.
Yeah, so this is like a ruling by definition.
As opposed to the ones by lower courts. I'd like to rescind what I said. This is the first ruling by the Wisconsin Supreme Court for this. And what they did in this case, this is the case by the Legal Win Voters. This is the procedural lawsuit for, you know, because we've all kept track of all four of the cases that are winding their way through. Laurel White wrote up a big explainer at WPR.org if you need to find out where these cases stand.
This nice is plug.
It was an extensive write-up. So this is the case that is strictly on procedural grounds. The League of Women Voters argued that the legislature could not meet in extraordinary session because the state constitution does not explicitly allow it. And so everything that they passed during that extraordinary session was unlawful, according to the League of Women Voters argument. The Supreme Court did not agree. The conservative majority did not agree anyway.
So it was a 4-3 ruling, siding with Republican lawmakers and against the argument that Sean just so brilliantly outlined. Basically, what we're looking at here is kind of the end of the line for this case that has really precipitated, I think that's the word I'm looking for, a lot of the big lame duck news that we've seen over the past several months, because this was like one of the first rulings that came down. It was the first ruling from a Dane County court related
to
lame duck.
First state lawsuit filed.
Yep, exactly. This is the one that after the Dane County ruling came out that caused Governor Evers to rescind those appointments that were confirmed during the lame duck session that were made by Governor Walker.
Yeah, and after that initial Dane County Circuit Court ruling, Governor Evers and Attorney General Call got Wisconsin out of that ACA lawsuit, that federal lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a biggie.
I want to call out Sean for having his papers because he always has his papers. So Sean has pulled out, now that we have established that the case is indeed closed, as it were, in the courtroom vernacular, Sean has taken out his his papers as he is wont to do. And I believe that paper has, am I seeing like headshot cutouts of two of the justices there, Sean?
Yes.
Yep. Okay. So that's Rebecca Bradley and Rebecca Dallet. What's going on there?
Well, these are quotes from these justices. Rebecca Bradley wrote the majority opinion in this case. She said, "The terminology the legislature chooses to accomplish the legislative process is squarely the prerogative of the legislature. The Wisconsin Constitution itself affords the legislature absolute discretion to determine the rules of its own proceedings." We kind of hinted that the court might issue a ruling along these lines, just given the way that they've ruled in other cases.
Mm-hmm.
They have over the years, certainly over the Walker years, given the legislature broad authority to handle its own proceedings. And that is basically what Justice Rebecca Bradley did with this ruling here. Justice Rebecca Dallet, who wrote the dissent, said the legislature violated the plain constitutional text and this court must act as a check. She's saying, where do you see in the Constitution that you can hold an extraordinary session? You don't. Mm-hmm. So you can't do it.
So, I mean, that was sort of the argument boiled down. It's like plaintiffs were saying, yeah, that's not a thing. And then the court came back and said, well, it's been a thing for a long time. It's a thing.
And it's a thing. If the legislature wants to call it a thing, they can do it. That's mm-hmm. the court's argument, basically, or the court's decision.
And this ruling came down on ideological lines, essentially, right?
Yes. I think the only doubt, okay, everybody kind of expected it was going to be a 4-3 decision. I was kind of wondering who would write it, and I guessed mm-hmm. that it would be Justice Dan Kelly, but it was Justice Rebecca Bradley who wrote the decision.
You were kind of basing that guess off of how arguments went in court.
Yes, because they really telegraphed things in arguments, I thought, where they were basically saying from the bench, hey, plaintiffs, you're wrong, you know, in so many words. They were really, I guess, tipping their hand when this thing was argued. And the final majority decision was a 4-3 decision. So kind of what we expected.
So if this ruling is the end of the line for this particular case, where do the other three cases stand at this point?
Well, one of them still stands before the state Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. And so this is kind of interesting, guys. I hadn't thought about it until today, but there's this other case, the Service Employees International Union. This is the union lawsuit, and it is challenging the content of the laws, not the process used to pass them. So the Supreme Court is still dealing with that case. And on Wednesday, they issued an order dealing with the timeline for the appeal in that case. They had, I didn't think about it at the time, but they were telling us on Wednesday that we're going to rule against the League of Women Voters. Because if they had ruled for the League of Women Voters, there's no law. Like, the laws would have been gone. And do you follow me?
So then there wouldn't have to be a hearing in the appeal of the other case?
Yeah, the SEIU case kind of disappears, poof. If there's no law, then you don't have to worry about the other case. So they kind of told us Wednesday that they're setting argument schedules for the other case. And so if we'd been paying attention, we would have known.
I'm just trying to imagine that news story, though. Like reporting, like, Supreme Court is going to rule this way.
Headline, justices tip hand in lame duck case. Subhead, it's really complicated. Stay with us.
I feel like that could be a subhead in any of our lame duck stories.
It's true.
It's really complicated.
It's really complicated. Stay with us. It's good. I'm going to use that and see if John takes it out when he edits our stuff.
Yeah, I will. Don't worry about it.
Bummer. Okay. Well, the other case, the SEIU case, challenges the constitutionality of the laws that were passed, mm-hmm. and it's a separation of powers case, right?
Yep. And then we have two federal cases. One that's a case that actually originated back in 2016. The lame duck element of it is just kind of like a little branching off of the case. It's like a motion off of this other case. And that has to do with the early voting restrictions and some changes to voter ID that were passed during the lame duck session. That is sitting with the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals in Chicago. They heard arguments on that back in 2017. So
on the overall case.
On the overall case. So when they rule on the overall case, that's kind of, they rule on this new thing too.
I don't know what's going on there.
It's a very unusual amount of time that's gone by, right?
It is very unusual. I guess the big takeaway, if you're like, oh my gosh, this is such a confusing mess, is that one of the big laws that Republicans passed in the December extraordinary session is still not law, even after this state Supreme Court ruling, because a federal court blocked it.
Mm-hmm. So which is the early voting stuff.
The early voting stuff, still not law, because a federal court has said it's not.
And then there is one other federal case. Are you still with us? That one is brought by the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, and it is making an argument that the lame duck session, the laws passed during the lame duck session, violated the U.S. Constitution's guarantee clause, which guarantees a Republican form of government. Republican with a lowercase r, that essentially means you vote for people, they represent you.
The majority rules.
Exactly. And they're saying, like, the people of Wisconsin elected Governor Evers and Attorney General Call to do specific things. The lame duck laws prohibit them from doing those things.
There you go.
All right.
I guess we do have a lot of news to report left on the lame duck stuff.
You feeling calmer now?
I'm getting there, yeah.
Just remember what American Lady of Letters Taylor Swift says. You need to calm down.
Okay, I'm getting there.
She's a wise woman.
Mm-hmm. So help me out with this budget, though, John, because the budget has been a wealth, a fountain of news stories. You go to the fountain of news and there's just like budget stories shooting out everywhere.
I'm picturing, I haven't had a vision on the podcast for a while, but I'm picturing like a big concrete, beautiful fountain. And it's inspired by the Joint Finance Committee. So you have sort of like the faces of the committee members, like Mount Rushmore. And then there are like tourists.
Are they spitting water out?
I don't know if that's not dignified, so I didn't want to say that. But so yes, in my vision, they're all sort of like, you know, yeah. And, you know, there's 16 of them and it's around. It's a beautiful fountain. And we go there. And we go there to get the news.
Okay.
And there's money in the bottom of the fountain. You know how people throw pennies in the... I really like this. This is good.
Man, I thought I was losing it this afternoon. But Laurel's giving me a run for my money here. Okay. So my point was... fountain. The Finance Committee passed the budget, John.
Yeah, we talked about that last week.
Yeah, but that's nearing the end of the budget process when that happens, right?
No.
Oh, yeah? Well, maybe because it has to pass the full legislature.
Yeah, and no is also what two Republican senators said this week about that budget.
Oh, yeah, I can't believe we forgot about that because we did stories about it, Laurel. One of the senators, you did Senator Steve Noss saying no.
Yep, he was the first one to say no. He says the budget is too big, too expensive, includes unacceptable tax and fee increases on Wisconsin taxpayers. So he is a no vote.
And then Senator Dave Craig said no for me also. Everything that Steve Noss said, basically. He kind of did say that if you heard him on WISN where he made the announcement that he was voting against the budget. And Dave Craig was really adamant that the budget spends too much. And he, my read of what he was saying is that there's really no way you could get his vote on this plan because the budget increases spending substantially more than he could support.
Mm-hmm.
So they both sound like they're not, certainly Dave Craig, and I think probably Steve Noss, they don't sound like they're on the fence on this thing very much. They sound pretty firmly against it. And there are 19 Republican senators in the Senate. They need 17 votes to pass it. My quick math, 19 minus 2, that's 17, guys.
They're right. Mm-hmm. So does that mean...
Analysis.
Using my sharp mind, can't quite equal yours. But I'm thinking that means they can't lose any more votes. And so if anybody else kind of jumps ship within the Senate Republican caucus, they've got some trouble. They're going to have to figure out ways to appease these members, right?
Yeah. I feel like we should at least entertain this idea that, hey, they could go out and get Democratic votes, right? They don't have to pass it with only Republican votes. It was introduced
theoretically.
And I feel like it would be a reasonable question for somebody to ask out in the world, like, what can't you get like a bipartisan budget? And I think just like in the world of the legislature, we just know that's not going to happen. Like Republicans would have to give up more than they want to get Democratic votes. And if they did that, if they got some Democratic votes, they might lose some more conservatives in the process. So that's just not going to happen. Wisconsin, there was a time, guys, and I didn't cover this, but I've read that like long, long ago.
It was even before old man Sean Johnson's time.
I was just like little kid Sean Johnson, maybe not even born. I don't know. But that budgets used to pass on bipartisan votes. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, that's nutty. Mm-hmm. That's really nutty.
But I don't think that's going to happen with this budget. I think what Republicans are trying to do is Senator Scott Fitzgerald is trying to pass it with 17. And so if Craig's out and Noss is out, then we turn attention to other people who might have, you know, opposed the budget.
You talked to one of those this week.
I did. Senator Dewey Strobel asked him, are you going to vote for the budget? And he said yes. And he's got a lot. He said there's a lot in there that Republicans support and that the governor should support. And so he's voting yes. He was on the Finance Committee, so I think that's significant. He had a hand in crafting this budget. And, you know, if you're on the Finance Committee and you vote against the budget anyway, there's a chance leadership won't put you on the Finance Committee again next session. I mean, that has happened in the past. So Dewey Strobel is voting for it. So I'm thinking back to 2017. There were four Republican senators who held up the budget at the end of the process. Let's see, who were they?
Nass.
Craig.
Craig. Strobel.
And?
Kapinga.
Chris Kapinga.
Have we heard from him?
Not exactly, no. Mm-hmm. But they might need to get his vote. The Journal Sentinel reported that there's a chance they're looking to amend the budget to include language that would let people buy Tesla vehicles directly from Tesla, not force people to go through a dealer, which they have to go through for other cars. I mean, that's the way the law is set up right now. You go through, if you want to buy a Ford, you go through a Ford dealer, mm-hmm. right? Who supported that bill for the letting people buy Teslas directly, Laurel?
That would be Chris Kapinga.
Yeah.
So we might be seeing our budget amendments to get the votes right there in action.
Yeah. So this was in the Journal Sentinel. Hmm. I mean, I haven't heard Kapinga personally weigh in on it unless he's done it while we were recording the podcast here. But that'd be interesting. That, if they put that in there, that's a pretty glaring sign that that was put there to get his vote. But we haven't seen what they're going to do yet.
Anyway, having nothing to do with electric cars, we also heard from the governor this week about the budget. What did he have to say?
I would say governor's keeping his options open, mm-hmm. was my read of it.
Everybody keeps asking him, Governor, are you going to veto this budget? Like, veto the entire budget, because it doesn't include things, particularly the Medicaid expansion, that you really, really wanted. And his response, really up until now and continuing this week, is, well, I don't know what the budget is going to look like when it eventually ends up on my desk, so I can't say if I'm going to veto something that doesn't exist yet.
Yeah.
Very existential.
Yeah. Like, who's to say? He is keeping his options open, and he has a couple of the things that he said this week. One, he's saying, Republicans, not too late. You can support the people's budget. Mm-hmm. Medicaid expansion, special ed funding, the public support this, and if you oppose it, you do so at your own peril. So he's kind of sending a little shot at them, like, hey, it's not too late to come my way. At the same time, he is saying, hey, look how far Republicans have already come my way.
Yeah,
that was the thing that was interesting to me during that presser, was he's like, you know, this budget's not cool, but also, look at all of the ideas of ours that they sort of embraced.
It's like he's still fighting the battle, but he has an exit strategy, you know? Like, if he doesn't get any Republican votes on Medicaid expansion, which he's not going to, then he has, if he wants to sign this budget with partial vetoes, mm-hmm. he kind of has a message to get out of there, you know? Look at what we did. And he does have a lot of things in there that are very clearly Evers initiatives that Republicans have supported. I'm thinking the capital budget, a $1.9 billion mm-hmm. increase in capital budget spending.
That's like twice the size of the last Walker capital budget.
And Republicans supported it. So mm-hmm. there are other examples too.
This is like, I think the first time I heard that sentiment was during the budget committee, and Democratic lawmakers said, you know, I think particularly the one I'm thinking of is Representative Chris Taylor, said that she really believes that having the Democratic governor introduce the budget that he did sort of pushed the needle and got Republican lawmakers to do things that they wouldn't have done. That was the first time I heard that articulated. And then now you're saying kind of the governor's reinforcing that. Mm-hmm. So I think kind of the wheels might be turning on a Democratic message on the budget.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that could be. And also at the same press conference where the governor spoke Thursday, his transportation secretary, Craig Thompson, said, now, just to be clear, what they passed is not the same as what the governor wanted. I mean, they're about $200 million short of where the governor was in terms of transportation revenue. However, look at all that revenue that they added that they wouldn't have if Tony Evers wasn't governor. So again, not what they want, but hey, better than what they would have gotten if Tony Evers were not governor. That's the message.
Well, guys, how are you doing?
I feel better.
I feel better too. You know, we
talked it out. Podcasting makes me feel better.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go listen to some more Taylor Swift.
It's not even a joke. Like, I enjoy podcasting with you guys.
It's important processing time.
Yeah. Hooray, Friday.
Well, Sean Johnson is WPR's Capital Bureau Chief.
Laura White is WPR's calm Capital Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our very tranquil resident politics nerd. He needs a calm down.
You know, much like T-Swift, Sean, Laurel, and I are constantly turning out the hits. So if you want new episodes almost every single week, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts. You can also find the show on Google Play and Stitcher, as well as many other podcast apps. And you can catch up on all of our past episodes anytime at wpr.org/politics.